Shout out to US Soy and the United Soybean Board for supporting this episode of One Song and for giving our podcast studio an unbelievably smooth, sustainable makeover. Here on our show, we dive deep into the music, dissecting every beat and lyric. Sustainability is just like that. Each eco-friendly choice we make is like a single note that contributes to life's melody. That's why Heartbeat and the USB are teaming up to lead the discussion around greening Hollywood. We're talking slashing the carbon footprint of production with soy-based alternatives like soy-based inks for printing scripts, soy foam for soundproofing studios, and even biodiesel generators to power sets. To see our sustainable studio transformation, watch the Tears for Fears episode of One Song and see behind-the-scenes clips of how we pulled the whole look together. It's all on at Heartbeat Audio on YouTube, and the link is in our show notes.
NetCredit is here to say yes, because you're more than a credit score. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partners. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
I'm actor, writer, director, and sometimes DJ Diallo Riddle.
And I'm producer, DJ, and songwriter Luxury, a.k.a. the guy who whispers interpolation on TikTok.
And welcome to the first episode of One Song,
the show where we deconstruct and celebrate some of your favorite songs from the past 60 years in music history and tell you why they deserve one more listen. I promise you, you'll never hear these songs the same way again.
Okay, Luxury, our first episode is about the great Amy Winehouse, her sultry, soulful music, and specifically her song Rehab. Before we get into that, though, I think it might be helpful to the listeners to know how we got here.
Our backstory, our origin story. Yeah, let's do it. The people need to know. How did these guys come together? The backstory to our show, to our friendship, to all of it, it's kind of cool. Like, we met at a birthday party, a kid's birthday party. So it was like a Saturday at 2. And we just like started talking and we were just vibing, straight vibing. And like, it didn't take long before kind of the classic cliche of maybe our era, maybe back in 30, 40 years ago, would have been like, we should write a screenplay together or whatever. We should do improv together. But now it's, we should do a podcast together. And boy, did we follow through on that promise? Because here we are. We made it. We got our podcast. It's happening. This is the first episode.
We did it. You know, one of the things that I think makes our show a bit different is the fact that you have the stems from so many songs in the pop music canon, including Rehab. For folks unfamiliar with the word stems, can you explain what those are and how in the world did you get your hands on them?
Absolutely. I mean, stems are literally just the component parts of the song. This is what they make in the studio. They lay down the drums, then someone mm-hmm. plays bass, and then the vocals, and in between, yep. you know, everything else. But it's all done one at a time. And when you hear the song, you're hearing it all together. So the rare thing, the special thing that I have is the step before that, where you can isolate them and listen individually. And that's where the magic happens. Because when you can just hear isolated anything, vocals,
yeah.
drums, you hear it in a completely new way. And it's really inspiring as a producer and songwriter. But as a fan of the music and of the artist, it's like you're hearing the song and it, that you maybe have heard 1,000 times completely differently.
And on this episode, we will hear Amy's voice, which I think you'll agree is just phenomenal. We will hear Amy's voice, just the vocal.
They tried to make me go to rehab. I said, no, no, no. Yes, I've been black, but when I come back, you no, no, no.
Chills. She has one of the most beautiful voices of modern times, if not of the pop era altogether. Incredible.
We are so excited to have you all join us for this show. This season, we've got some real classics for you. We've got Mo Money, Mo Problems by the Notorious B.I.G. We'll pick apart Blue Monday by New Order.
And I am stoked to dig deeper into Nirvana's Smells Like Teen Spirit and Britney Spears' Toxic.
And also artists like Beyonce, Stevie Wonder, artists that you know and love, but you'll never hear their music the same way.
We got a big season coming up.
Okay, everybody, this is One Song.
Diallo, have I ever told you my Amy Winehouse introduction story?
No, you
haven't.
Let's hear about
Amy Winehouse. Well, let's see. This is kind of funny because it goes back to a previous life when I was just Luxury, the band. We were so underground that the underground didn't even know about us. But I had somehow made our way. I had funded a trip to Europe for the band, me and a bass player and a drummer. I had debt that I was paying to a friend who put up the money, a real estate magnate who was very generous. We're in Europe. We have no audience, no attention at all. And that's the first time I ever heard Amy Winehouse. This is 2006, was when she was blowing up there.
Hey, before you go any further, what is that like when you're touring in a foreign country and people haven't heard the music? Like, are you opening for bigger acts?
Can I just tell you, because it was sort of like long enough ago that I look back on that person who did it, and I'm like, how did you do that, and why did you do that? I booked it myself. This is the MySpace era, so I would literally go online as a different MySpace persona, Victoria James.
Oh, snap.
I was my own booking agent because I thought that sounded
Donald
fancy.
What is Donald Trump's name?
I know, exactly.
Baron something?
That's
okay,
right.
Go ahead.
I was my own publicist. But I booked a tour of Europe. I got on the road. I got us all there. All the equipment, renting cars, driving the opposite of the road. Total misery. And then we'd show up to the gig and there'd be a handful of people, not that many, like seven or eight. But you just reminded me of this one gig we played in Nottingham. Came off, we were playing and people seemed to be digging it. They were like, kind of like... There was one girl at the side of the stage. When I came off stage, she like was standing there and I was like bracing myself for a compliment. And I was like, kind of like, you know how that's like. Okay, I'm about to be humble. And she goes, that was appalling.
I thought she was going to say, I wanted to see Victoria, who had such good things to say.
Oh my God, I'll never forget. And then I spent the rest of the night trying to convince her, trying to say, well, what about it exactly was appalling? Because perhaps you may have missed something that was not appalling about it. My God.
Luxury, so, that's your game. I can see. Like you go up to them and you ask them for notes.
I'd like to be better so that next time around, that was a real moment. So
that's a real moment. I would be remiss if I didn't mention, you mentioned that the girl came up to you at a 2006 concert and said that was appalling. Same year, I had just started posting, videos on the internet for my comedy. And like we had built up like a small following of people who liked our comedy. Then I remember one time.
Was this you and Bashir?
This is me and Bashir. And I remember one time we posted a video and like the second comment was a person who had loved everything we had posted before. And they put not her best. They put not you are best. And to this day, anytime me and Bashir want to criticize each other's writing, we always say, not her best.
Not her best.
That person had a lasting influence. Comments were really honest.
That's funny too, because that's also the era where we are hearing for the first time maybe some of these like internet, like you are.
Absolutely.
So the first time you see it written down, you're like, you're pronouncing it like not out of irony, just out of like, that's what it looks like. Not her best.
Not her best.
Yeah, I know. This is the world of 2006, though, by the way. And what's funny, if you kind of look back on that era with some of the footage of like Amy Winehouse, like I was just watching the documentary the other night, and the fashion, that Bloghouse moment was really infiltrating everywhere. And that's relevant. Bloghouse being that moment in the mid-2000s where the blogs were how we were getting our music, right?
Yeah.
Were you getting your music around
that era? I absolutely was. I kind of missed that period. I kind of missed that period a lot. Wait, so you were opening for her?
I wasn't opening for Amy Winehouse. My point is that with the blogs, the way I heard Amy Winehouse, it wasn't on the radio.
Oh, yeah.
It was because of a remix.
Absolutely.
I had a blog at the time, too. I don't know if you know this. Did you know that I had a blog, Diallo? I had a blog.
No, but now I'm your biggest fan.
It was kind of decently known. It was called Disco Workout. And that was...
I think I might have known Disco Workout, Were you guys ever on a Hype Machine?
But definitely on Hype Machine.
Okay, so I was all over Hype Machine back in those days.
And years later, I would meet people and I'd be like, I do music as Luxury, but I can never hurt you. And I'd be like, I have a blog called Disco Workout.
And they were like,
yeah.
Oh, I used to love this.
I'm glad you like what I do.
I was all over Disco Workout. In fact, I probably have some MP3s on my laptop.
Here's the story of my life.
The album is listed as discoworkout.com.
That was me and my buddy Jonatron and Sarah. So that's where I heard Amy Winehouse was on a blog where it was the Hot Chip Remix. I'd rather be. One cool thing about that remix is that it's super reverential to the original. Like, it really isn't. It's actually kind of doing the repetition thing, which is a remixy thing, which wouldn't happen in the original. And then the beat is more of a solid four to the floor. And we'll get into more of the micro and nitty gritty of the drums in a minute. But aside from that, it's kind of like true to the original sound.
It's true to the original sound. That is interesting. There's a whole genre of remixes that barely changes. Like the Daft Punk remix to Get Lucky.
It's indistinguishable. I cannot tell the difference.
Almost the exact same song, except that it's about 18 minutes long, and there is a part that's kind of cool towards the end.
I think Daft Punk enjoys doing that to us.
There are other people who've done that, though. Yeah. It's just like, that's the remix?
That's the remix, in quotes.
I wonder how much it checks y'all collected.
I'll get into why Amy's voice has such a deep impact on me in a second. But first, what was going on in your life when Rehab first came out?
What was going on in your life in that era, in the Blockhouse era? It's funny that you say that because, like I said, I knew Hot Chip and I knew Amy Winehouse. I did not know that remix. Mm-hmm. I was DJing all the time, like 3 or 4 times a week. I was the director of music and talent for Andre Balazs at his Standard Hotels here in Los Angeles.
I did not know that's how you pronounce his name.
Andre Balazs. Mm,
interesting.
I was doing the Chateau Marmont and Bar Marmont, but basically I had a lot of access to music. I was also hiring the other DJs. So, like, you know, when I wasn't DJing, I was still going in on my off nights and listening to other DJs play sets. And Amy Winehouse just kind of like, I feel like we discovered her. I might have come across her a couple of years before you because I was really big on her album, Frank.
Big ballers don't do nothing for ya. But you'd love a rich man 6'2" or taller.
Which was Salaam Remy's... It was a jazz album.
Right.
You know, what was cool is it was like a jazz album that went well with Angie Stone and Jill Scott.
Right.
And if you were into like that kind of sound.
Kind of a neo-soul jazz.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Soulquarian. Shout out to Questlove and Victor Duplay and all those guys. It absolutely fit into that same kind of set. And so when I wasn't hiring, you know, as the director of music and talent, I weighed in. I was a part of the design department. I weighed in on napkins and the aprons that the chef wore, you know, back of house. I also hired the box models that went into the...
So if you were
in Hollywood at a certain time, you would go into the Standard Hotel.
The
there was always like a living person behind the front desk
like
in the box.
Like a mermaid?
It was like sometimes we would dress them as a mermaid. Sometimes it was just as a student reading in her dorm room. His or her... After a while, we had men doing it too.
That was always an era, wasn't it? Yeah, we wouldn't do that
time.
Now,
and tourists were always like, oh my God, there's a live person behind the front desk. It was crazy. But I feel like, you know, between the DJs and just being like around a lot of hipsters at that time, we sort of got that this was sort of an alternative to the hits of the day. And like, looking back, like, this is to say nothing against the hits of the day. Like, I love the fact you can look back on an era and the pop songs are everything from Missy Elliott to, you know, I mean, like rappers like T.I., anything with Neptune's production was big. Like, it was a, like, hip hop and urban music at that time was like a hit factory. It's incredible to me that as a DJ, I never had to worry about what to play at midnight in a nightclub because there was always a big danceable hit that was coming out like every year and every month. And it was just cyclical and it just kept going. But there was still a need for the alternative scene. You know, I'm thinking now about that David Byrne of Talking Heads line where it's like, you know, for there to be a true underground, a true alternative, it has to kind of go against the prevailing music. And for a lot of us, that was that, you know, neo-soul sound because that stuff, you could dance to it. You know, you could dance to Sunshine Anderson, her big song, but like that wasn't what was getting played on pop,
right.
On pop or even hip hop radio. And Amy was a part of that. And I think that was like a really cool thing about that period because you had stuff like Amy Winehouse. You had Peter, Bjorn, and John, you know.
Right.
You know, we don't care about the
young folks.
Yes, exactly. We don't care about, you know. It was a fun time. That was excellent.
I don't whistle.
It was a fun time for catchy songs that weren't on the radio. And I think about Amy and Ballet Drawn Boy and Freeform 5 and Interpol. I mean, like, you know, Tori Moi, who's still out there producing. You know, these were some of like the first generation of Coachella artists.
Yeah, and I think the bloghouseness of it all shouldn't be like discounted as being a factor in it. I think there's a lot of cross-pollination of genres and artists and styles is happening in this moment.
Yeah.
And literally what's being DJ'd, if it's trash, Errol Alkin's Night in London, but all the way to like the Steve Aoki stuff before he became an EDM star.
Listen,
remember
Steve
Aoki?
Steve knows I played this.
His Tuesday night. What was that called again? In Hollywood?
I don't think you can actually say the official name on the radio.
Oh my God, I forgot what it was.
Fucking awesome.
Okay.
It was the fucking awesome party. But, you know, here's the thing
about
Steve Aoki.
And all that, yeah.
And I'm going to date myself, but like, when I was hiring the DJs at the Standard, I was like, Steve, you and Frankie Chan have this great thing going on Coanga Boulevard. It's bringing out hipsters from different, you know, black hipsters, white, like, everybody who's listening to everything that's on there. you know, MacBook now. We're buying the records. Mark Ronson is spinning the records. Like, bring that vibe to the standard. And you could book Steve Aoki back then for like $150, $200.
Sure.
Just like
now.
All of us.
It can't be done now.
I offered him $150, $200 recently, and I got a cease and desist.
Sake.
I got a cease and desist.
But let's get into Amy. Let's get into Amy's voice, yep. Why it's so powerful and unique and beautiful, and why it resonates so much, or at least with me, emotionally. Mm. I have something I want to play for you that you may not have ever heard before quite in this way.
Okay.
They tried to make me go to rehab. I said, no, no, no. Yes, I've been black, but when I come back, you no, no, no. I ain't got the time. And if my daddy thinks I'm fine, they tried to make me go to rehab. I won't go, go, go.
My God, listening to that, I don't know about you, but it gives me kind of chills.
It's so good. Is Sharon from the Dap Kings, is she doing backup vocals on that?
I don't think she's a part of this. I think there was actually a little bit of like tension, not tension, but from what I understand, the Dap Kings working with Amy Winehouse and it being their big breakthrough ended up being a thing that they worked out eventually, but Sharon wasn't on board on day one. Let's put it that way. But you are absolutely right to point out that the Dap Kings, that's the group that Mark Ronson hired, the production team and band, to replicate the sound he had in his head. They absolutely nailed it. One of the reasons is because they used all of the techniques and styles and equipment from vintage late 50s, early 60s recording for soul, for vintage soul and
R&B
tracks. Yeah,
sort of like 50s, 60s girl groups.
So you're hearing the reverb that you'd hear in a girl group, and reverb, kind of, that's the sound of like you're in the stairwell. That's what you're hearing. That's very 60s. It's the modern version of that might be delay or even just dry vocals, but that big sound, you're absolutely right to, you're nailing it with it being a girl group thing. And we'll get into more of the instruments in a minute, but their recording techniques, recording to tape, the band recording all in one room instead of doing the drums and then laying down the bass on top. And then all of that was very much coming right out of the playbook of 60s recording techniques.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot going on with her vocals that I want to talk about. And one thing, and she's talked very openly and often about giving credit to her influences. And, you know, she loves, adores, I should say, from some of the things I've read, she loves Dinah Washington.
Yes.
She
Let's
actually,
get into that.
She's got a great anecdote about how, like, her brother was playing Ray Charles, and she walked in the room, and she's like, what is this? And that's all she listened to for 3 months was Ray Charles. We'll get into Ray in just a moment, too, because he makes an appearance in this song. But
he
one
does.
Thing I want to talk about first is, to me, I hear an awful lot of Billie Holiday
yes.
in her intonation.
Totally.
In her the richness of her timbre, which is a fancy way of saying, like, the actual... The way her voice sounds is very
specific.
Shout
out to all the women named Tambra out there.
I love you, Tambra. My first love. You'll never forget. And yeah, so here, let's listen to some Billy. This is her 1941 rendition of the classic All of Me. And see if you can hear some of the similarities that I'm hearing.
Your goodbye left me with eyes that cry.
Wow. I love it.
Chills. I get chills with Billy as well. She's one of my favorite artists, mm-hmm. favorite singers, songstresses. Seamstress? Songster?
That, songstress?
I said songstress and it didn't feel like
it.
A word
like
all
it.
Of a sudden.
I think I've seen it before.
Maybe I've made it up just now. Let's make it a thing. One thing that I hear in common with Billy and Amy is, besides, again, sort of the resonance of their vocal tone, just the sound of their voice, mm-hmm. is their rhythmic choices, how it's mm-hmm. a very jazz thing.
The syncopation.
They're kind of behind yeah. the beat.
Yes,
it's a little bit
time.
Lazy. There are some sounds
Everybody
that are...
Everybody from Timbaland
yep.
to Jay Dilla, they really know how to write that beat that's just behind the beat.
It's so funny this you
is
mentioned
not the,
that.
This is not the beat that you can create... you know, okay, so there's an app in Teslas where you can create a beat while you're sitting
what?
In parking lots.
There's an app in the Tesla
My
where you can make beats?
My friends who own Teslas have told me this, and you can't find that beat in there. That beat is not there. Thank
right.
God.
You're not able to get that lazy a little
yes,
behind.
Yes, exactly. Just that little
jazzy,
bit behind the
right,
beat.
Right,
yeah, it makes
right.
a big difference.
You know, it's funny you mentioned some of those artists. We'll get to that in a minute, but you're dead on. I think we're both hearing the same things, which mm-hmm. is that rhythm is being played with, placement of the sound, placement of the notes. And I think, obviously, Amy's first love was jazz.
100%. You know, again, you know, I was a DJ and I remember that first album. That first album was so jazz. It had songs like Take the Box.
I came home this evening and nothing felt like how it should be.
It had In My Bed. In My Bed actually samples Nas's They Shootin'. You know,
oh,
They
really?
Shootin'. Made You Look. Okay.
That's awesome.
All the hip hop fans out there were like, that's not the name of the song. Okay, you know what? It's called Made You Look. Okay, get off. Turn down the volume in your car for a little bit. You know, like, she was a jazz artist, and we loved mm-hmm. it because she allowed modern listeners to have, like, slightly less crackly recordings to enjoy the sounds of a Billie Holiday
right.
and an Ella Fitzgerald and also, like, Etta James and just
Absolutely,
these artists
Etta
that
James.
You just don't,
yep.
you know, if you like that type of singing and voice, it takes me back to when I first heard Erykah Badu, and to a certain extent, I feel like Amy Winehouse is like I had the same reaction the first time I heard her. First time I heard Erykah Badu, I was working at the radio station for my college. Kedar Massenburg and his Imminent Brilliance record label exec sent out these 12 inches that had a piece of incense taped to the 12 inch.
Incense?
It was one stick of incense.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was frankincense and myrrh or Egyptian musk, but I know that it came with a free stick of incense. And when you're a college student and you're broke, you're like, free incense from my dorm. And I was like, all right, I'll put on the record. You know, it might be cool. And here comes this woman who Amy Winehouse, Erykah Badu, she sounds like she's singing from another era.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And so the incense is flowing and you have this song. You know, I really appreciate that about Amy, because it's like she's singing like Ella and Etta over Phil Spector 1960s songs, you know, and her
exactly.
voice had, you know, just she was tying into black singers of an earlier era. I will have to admit something at this point before I forget to say it. Speaking of 12 inches, I had the 12 inch to rehab.
Oh, okay? You did? What were there remixes on it, but not the Hot
Well,
Chip on?
We can talk about the remixes on it, but I want to talk about the cover art. Because on the cover art, I didn't know, I liked Frank, but it never had occurred to me, the songs off of Frank, I wasn't like a Amy Stan at this point.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think if you're like viewing this online, we'll probably throw up a picture of it. If you're driving, just Google Amy Winehouse Rehab single. She's darker than me on the cover of this. She's very, very dark. I don't know what bronzer she had used that day, but she's she's a sis. And you know, this she doesn't have the pompadour. She doesn't have like the Ronnie Spector.
She
pompadour.
Has the. Oh, she doesn't have it yet.
No, that hair is down
okay.
and it is matted and is bare.
Right.
And from a distance, you think that you're looking at a black woman with dreads.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and I'm just saying that it's almost like the flip of like in the 50s and 60s. Once again,
yes.
when like soul groups would have like a picture of a white couple walking along the sand, and it'd be like, I'll always think of you by the Spinners, you know, like whatever that was.
Right.
This was the flip of that because I was just like, the sister can sing. I didn't, of course, Salam Remy's working with this Nubian princess, but then, of course, as we learned, I was actually shocked.
So, you did not know when did you find out she was not a Nubian princess?
2015. I don't.
No, but 4 years after
like,
her death.
No, I found out obviously at some point. Somebody was like, "Hey, this is Amy Winehouse." I was like, "Oh, that's not what I imagined at all." But
I love that.
I thought she looked like Merlot. But but seriously, it is interesting to me that I do feel like in the beginning she was marketed to us as that woman, and I was going back and looking at some of her earlier videos from the Frank era. Like she always had a black love interest in those videos. Always like a dude who, you know, kind of looked like me if I worked out, you know, like it was that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think she was to a certain extent, you know, there's some blue-eyed soul going on here that we do have to acknowledge.
Yeah. To your point, jazz is her first love. And mm-hmm. all of these singers, all of these R&B and blues and jazz singers, she grew up like listening to, obsessing over, wanting to be like, out of absolute purity, because that is not the path to riches and stardom. This is just her love was the music.
Yeah, no, she was mad cool. And I will say that, like, as somebody who was into music at the time and DJing, like, this was a song that did hit with, you know, people from all over, you know, like it was everybody's cool song. You know, it wasn't My Humps by the Black Eyed Peas. Shout out to Taboo, you know, but it wasn't that
give a
song.
Shout out to
it was
Taboo
a cool
every episode,
song that everybody
just,
could
be
get
a
into.
Thing. Go on. Sorry.
Didn't no, what was it?
I was saying that should be a thing. Always giving a shout out to Taboo every episode.
I'm only going to not Applebee Dab, not Will I Am.
Just Taboo.
Taboo's a forgotten member.
Poor guy.
Not forgotten.
You remembered him just now.
I remember
live
right
on
now.
Sirius
but
XM.
But I think that was one thing. At the end of the day, like, there's Amy.
Yeah.
And there is a person who seems really approachable, really real, and like connected to the culture. And you feel like you just want to be a part of that.
Right. It's so funny you said that, because what Mark Ronson says when he talks about their first meeting is that, because what happens when you're a producer and you're working with a lot of people, you get set up on these blind dates with artists. And so he talks about
awkward
how he
first
was,
dates over Froyo.
Absolutely. Lots of Froyo involved. So he talks about how before they met for the first time, he was sort of not sure what to anticipate, because there was some tabloid stuff already. And there was the previous record. He didn't know what was going to happen with their chemistry. And he says that immediately they hit it off. First of all, they're both Russian Jews in the music industry, which was something that apparently connected them. And frankly, I'm also a Russian Jew in the music industry. And that's part of the story for me with the connection, I think, that I later figured out is there. But more specifically, when they first met and they first sat down, and in fact, they didn't sat down, they went for a walk. And one of their first conversations was Amy talking about her rehab experience. And she said it kind of as a joke. She was like, yeah, they tried to make me go to rehab. And people, this is almost too good to be true.
I know.
But I've heard this story so many times. What happened? Amy was saying, they tried to make me go to rehab. I said, no, no, no. Ronson's like, wait a second. That is a song. Stop
clear the rest of your afternoon.
We are going back to the studio. And that's exactly what they did. That's exactly what they did. Amy was a little bit like, I was just joking. Are you serious? And he's like, no, that's a real hook
now,
right there.
Now her dad says, have you heard this?
I probably
her
have heard him deny.
Her dad says that she had those words written in her songbook.
Oh, really?
And that she had intended on writing a song to that point.
You know what that could very well be, because she wrote it that night, apparently rather quickly.
Yeah.
Because she went back and had the basic chords and the melody and the words in enough time that she left, and Ronson stays up all night in the studio crafting a demo, which I'd like to play for you right now.
Let's
hear it.
Because
what's incredible about it is remembering this story. Mm-hmm. This, the next morning, this exists, and 24 hours prior, it didn't exist. And listen to how close to the final
this demo
ends up being.
I can't wait.
Yes, I've been black, but when I come back, you know, no, no. I ain't got the time. And if my daddy thinks I'm fine, just try to make me go to rehab. I say no, no, no.
Woo! Mark is clean.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy to hate on a dude pulling on so many decades of pop music and black music, but he doesn't, I'll tell you what he's not guilty of. He's not guilty of like wholesale copy.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that you got to get, because it's hard to like pull in these influences and not make the drum be like, doo, 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 you know, like going straight towards one song.
The Be My Baby.
Special shout out to one song. It's the best show on the radio.
Yeah.
But like,
you're lucky to
it's very
it.
Easy to like, you know, when you're trying to do an homage to a period, sort of latch onto one song. He doesn't really do that. By the way, Rehab success also made Ronson the go-to guy for retro sounds. You know, people, you know, I've already mentioned Salam was going for jazz. Rafael Sadiq has a whole period of his career from House of Music by Tony through Instant Vintage, where he's trying to capture like this classic soul sound. And, you know, in that way, Mark Ronson is like the white Rafael Sadiq. And I'm sure Mark considers that a huge compliment, because he loves black music. And I'm a little bit mixed about it, because listen, white artists tend to make more money over time than black artists. You know, look up rock and roll, you know, when you have a second. But I mean, like, I can't take anything away from Ronson. Like, I feel like, you know, he listens to the right records. He knows how to extrapolate without even interpolating, you know, heavily. And, you know, shout out to him, man. I mean, like, this Amy's record is just one of those great iconic records of
right,
the decade.
Right. I don't want to be too contrarian, but with that beat, I actually have a couple of examples where I do think he was inspired pretty directly, but not in an illegal sort of way.
Mark, you crook.
He's not a crook.
How dare you make me look like an idiot and steal from black artists?
So what's incredible about what you just heard is that that's actually all Ronson. He went in there, laid down the drums, played guitar, played bass, did the Wurlitzer. He did all of that that night. So when Amy returned to the studio the next day, she heard basically what you just heard. So this is just me theorizing here, but when I hear the beat that Ronson laid down, I'm pretty sure he was pulling from one of these songs as inspiration.
He went away and you hung around and bothered me every night. And when I wouldn't go out with you, you said things that weren't very nice. My boyfriend's back and you're gonna be in trouble.
Right now, I'm sorry. Is that the version of "My Boyfriend's Back" that we've always heard our entire
yes,
lives?
Although there are several different re-recordings of it. That's
because I don't
Angels.
Remember that intro to the song. I just remember it coming in. My boyfriend's back, and you're going to be in trouble.
Well, that's not the only one that has that beat. And here's another another track from a couple years earlier. Probably the original version
okay.
of that.
Let's hear it.
This is the Marvelettes with their track "Please, Mr. Postman." By the way, incidentally, the first Motown number one. So we may have a lineage there where the Marvelettes version, which lays down the boom.
I've heard that Postman's back. The opening of My Boyfriend's Back.
Yeah.
By the way, it seems like everybody's back in
Everyone's
those early
back.
Songs.
Yeah.
If I wrote a song today, I'd just be like, people are back.
We're back. Backstreet's back.
You get to at
All
least
right.
top 40.
Yeah.
Apparently. But
yeah.
besides everybody being back, I got to say that intro to My Boyfriend's Back, I've never noticed it having an intro before. That's
right. That's interesting. Well, no, there are, you know, back then with the girl groups, you've got like a handful of songwriting teams that want to have the song get cut as many times as possible. So I definitely have an Angels version of My Boyfriend's Back. And I think I have a Marvelettes. I might even have a Ronettes version.
What was there the biggest definitely... version? The Ronettes?
The Angels, I think, is the big.
Is the big,
is the
big?
One you know. Yeah. But it's possible that you've heard one of the others.
Group. I just don't. I feel like I've never heard of the Angels. You know,
yeah. A lot
Do they
of
have
these,
any other hits that I know of?
A lot of these girl groups were one and done. That's definitely their big. That is their big track.
Okay. You know? Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm still learning stuff about you. I didn't know you and Amy have some shared background going on.
Right. It's true. I mean, between their Jewishness, but also specifically their Ashkenazi Jewishness and Russian Jewishness.
Okay. Uh-huh.
You know, one thing about being a Jew in the music industry is people are often not aware of the fact that there are literally 14 million Jews on planet Earth. There's not that many. We're a little bit overrepresented in certain industries. So the fact of the matter is, sometimes I'll kind of go about my business and kind of notice somebody or somebody's art and feel a certain connection, and then only later notice that it might be, oh, wait, they're Jewish? I don't know why that would be relevant, but I kind of feel like it is. And for me, when my experience in kind of hearing her music and like learning about her, and especially watching some of the documentaries about her, which are very poignant, I feel this kind of older brotherness towards her. Which may or may not be connected to our being of shared heritage, but there's a lot about her that feels very like that moves me in a very deep way. It's hard to put my finger on exactly why, but then it all comes through that voice and you hear her singing and you hear her struggle. And of course she passes away in 2011 at age 27. And the whole thing is very, you know, it's a sad.
She was at 27 too. Huh?
She was a 27
that magic
club.
Number, right?
I hate saying 27
yeah.
club, but that's
yeah.
what it is. Mm-hmm. Along with Brian Jones and Jimi Hendrix and
Jim Morrison, right?
Jim Morrison and Janis Joplin and
a
I think Kurt
them.
Cobain, I yeah. think, pretty sure. But yeah, too many, way too many. I mean, to be honest, the more I think about it, that connection that I have is pretty universal. I think everyone was rooting for Amy. I think watching her decline into drugs and the horrible paparazzi situation she was constantly surrounded by and the bulimia, it's like there's thing after thing after thing that she was suffering through in public as a very young person. And I think, and it comes out in the music. We hear it in the music. Rehab of all the songs, to be honest, is maybe the most humorous because it does sort of stem from that lightheartedness. Mm-hmm. And yet the subject matter is very dark.
Yeah.
She should have gone to rehab. She shouldn't have said no, no, no. So
it is funny because when I heard the song at the time, I thought that was just the coolest song. And, it, you know, obviously we didn't know the extent of her problems at that point. But it is funny because you and I are both dads.
Yes.
And the story about her...
Different children, but yes.
Yeah. We think. But, you know, when I hear that, you know, that conversation. You know, that's basically her dad saying, I want you to go to rehab. She's saying no. I hear that differently now that I'm a father.
Yeah.
You know, I hear through her anecdote a father's desperation. He knows that there's something going on here, and he wants her to make a change. And so that story, which, you know, I would have probably thought at the time was like cool and radical and push against,
yeah,
you know, authority.
Right.
Now I hear it and I'm like, oh God, please, please listen to parents. Sometimes they know what they're talking about. It is funny how that kind of thing can affect you differently.
You know, my reading of the line is that, and from what I understand of the story, watching the documentaries, is that the dad was saying, my daddy says it's fine. maybe I'm misreading the line, but like,
as I understood the anecdote, the line was originally, he tried to make me go to rehab,
yeah,
and I said no. And
yeah,
so I, maybe we're saying the same thing, but
yeah,
you know, I do think that
we can,
you know,
also
to a certain extent it was
not
a father
talk shit about Mitch on
trying,
the air. That's fair. I am curious.
I think there was some concern there for his daughter. But I think it's important to point out that, like, you know, we know that these artists have, you know, issues with substances, but the same way I feel about Charlie Parker, like,
yeah,
not everybody who took heroin was as dope as Charlie Parker. Like, you know, not everybody who has Amy issues was as dope as Amy. Amy was dope because she was just a dope human being.
I mean,
she had an amazing voice, an amazing talent.
Yeah.
And she was an amazing student of like all these old art forms.
Yeah, she was. She loved jazz. She was an aficionado. It was very innate to her. In fact, she didn't pay attention to pop music. She was a hardcore practitioner of the art and songwriter in that form. She was as legit as it gets. In fact, here's Questlove of The Roots talking about Amy's appreciation of that genre.
I really miss not having her here to school me on jazz. I mean, I thought I was a music snob, and I thought I had my doctorate in jazz, but no, like, there's so much more I could have learned. And, you know, see, she's a teacher, more than like, oh, my Skype buddy. She taught me a lot.
Well, according to Questlove, before her death, Amy had expressed wanting to start a supergroup, including him, as well as Yasiin Bey and Raphael Sadiq.
Two out of three of those are good
pretty
choices.
Sick.
Two
oh, yeah,
of those, two out of three. Shout out to Raphael and Yasiin.
All right.
Yeah.
I'll just leave it at that. Okay.
I think it's a good lineup, but you know, I will say, in all seriousness, Quest knows how I feel about him. In all seriousness, this song has such longevity because Amy has so much respect for the genres that she's paying homage to. You know, like, when you think about the, you know, this is traditionally black music, but Amy is like, in a way, she's like, you know, just bringing it back to the forefront. You know, the proximity of Amy Winehouse to black music and artists. Black music was always, you know, it was really becoming pop during this time.
Right.
I just want to put it back into context. Like, black music was pop music. We had finally supplanted rock music, like Sum 42 and,
right,
you know, even Fall Out Boy and Good Charlotte. Like,
right,
they were playing second fiddle,
no, you're right,
by this point.
There's a moment right around
Missy
this time when literally hip hop takes over as the number one genre,
as
right?
the driver
right?
of youth culture in this country.
It's so funny.
And it's easy to forget how, and by the way, it's about to get supplanted again just a couple of years later by EDM.
Oh,
no,
okay.
I think EDM comes in and all of a sudden that takes over. But like, Jay-Z played Redding, and you know, Liam Gallagher of
right.
Oasis had a big problem with it, and Oasis and Jay-Z gets up there and performs
right.
Wonderwall, and somehow the lyrics are a perfect troll of Oasis. It's
That's
incredible.
So funny. I love that.
But it's like, on the one hand, you've got
it's
all
easy
these...
to forget there's that moment where that transition's happening, because we're
yes.
just living in that era now. We're living in the after of that
yeah,
era.
Yeah, we're living in the, I mean, like who it's also blended now.
Right.
Like, Lil Uzi Vert has like a huge song, you know, this year, and it's basically
right.
Baltimore club music.
Lil Yachty
like
sounds like
really
Tame Impala, right?
Period.
The last Lil Yachty record sounds like Tame
yes,
Impala.
Yes, Lil Yachty is trying to sound like Jimi Hendrix. I mean, like, we're still figuring out what
right.
the sound of this decade is
right.
going to be. But looking back, you know, some 15 years to the period of that Amy Winehouse is in, she's literally giving us an alternative to, you know, all the black artists who are literally like, you know, crossing over with this mass appeal, and yet she's able to bring us this music that's influenced by all these cool, cool genres of the past.
Well said, yeah.
Speaking of Jay-Z.
Let's speak about Jay-Z.
I mean, like, I bring up Jay-Z to talk about this transition to pop culture, when in fact, who should happen to appear on the remix of Rehab?
Heron flows more lethal than Marilyn's nose. I'm a OD till I'm at peace like Anna Nicole.
Man, Jay-Z used to come with some savage lines.
I forgot how
yo.
Funny that was.
Like, but you don't give him props. Like, he did the H-O-V-O-D flow. You know what I mean? All overdoses, all famous overdoses. And that Anna Nicole thing was not, you know, it's usually time plus tragedy. He was just like, tragedy.
Cold.
But, you know, I will say Justin Timberlake took a similar route with his multiple collaborations with producer and artist Timbaland. You know, but Amy was just, she was just more of an outsider, you
right.
know, than them. I mean, like Timberlake, he was making forays. I love Suit and Tie just for the sample of, I think the song is Sly and Wicked or something like that. You'll have to, you know, Timbaland is also a student of just really cool music, and he would pass these off to Timberlake. But that was like a safe play. I mean, like, no diss to them. That was safe because you've got one of the most successful hip-hop producers of all time, one of the most successful pop artists. She's coming out of nowhere.
Right.
You know, about the time NSYNC is saying bye, 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 she's nowhere to be right. found on the zeitgeist map. So I just think that it was a wild and rambunctious time. I'm so happy they took the chances they took.
You know, Diallo, I think you called it perfectly earlier. We've been talking about a lot of the influences, Amy's voice, the production style, what Ronson brought to it. We've got the girl groups. We've got the Dap Kings. We've got 50s and 60s soul. There's one other point, though, that I think often gets overlooked. You kind of alluded to it earlier, and I want to go a little deeper into the J. Dilla connection.
Oh, nice.
Because I think there really is a one going on here.
Okay.
That people kind of, the jazz and the reverb and the 60s soul are usually kind of top of mind. So let's get into that. But
yes.
First, let's have a little break, and we'll get into it right after.
Sometimes yeah. You gotta pay the bills.
Thanks to the U.S. Soy and the United Soybean Board for the sustainable makeover of our podcast studio and for sparking discussions on greener Hollywood production. Just like notes in a song, sustainable living is just a series of small, eco-friendly choices that contribute to the melody. Check out the Tears for Fears episode of One Song and see behind-the-scenes clips of how they pulled the whole look together. It's all on @HeartbeatAudio on YouTube, and the link is in our show notes.
Hey guys, Sean Hayes here. Jason Bateman, Will Arnett, and I had a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to sit down with not one, not two, but three presidents of the United States on our recent episode of Smartless. That's because President Biden, a returning guest, brought two of his favorite pals, former Presidents Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, all joined us for unforgettable conversation. It's a historic episode of Smartless as we pry into the minds of these remarkable leaders. We'll cover everything from their time in office, America's responsibilities in the world, and their personal passions in an episode full of some candid stories, insightful perspectives, and a few surprises along the way. Whether you're a political junkie or just curious about the inner workings of the Oval Office, this episode is a must listen. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to hear from three of the most influential figures in recent American history. Follow Smartless on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also listen to Smartless ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
All right, Luxury, before the break, you told me you had discovered a connection between Amy Winehouse and J. Dilla. I gotta hear what this is.
I think there's something about this track in particular that's very Dilla. And part of it comes from how Amy is approaching her vocal, her top line, with, as we alluded to before, with the jazz kind of behind the beat. Syllables are lagging. She's doing that sad. It's swinging. It's not landing exactly where the beat is. But the band is playing funk with a pretty strict, tight rhythm.
Okay.
It's not swinging
yeah.
very distinctively.
Mm-hmm.
And that combination where the band is straight up funk
yeah.
and she's singing on top, her vocal line has got that swing, that little lag, that jazz swing feel to mm-hmm. it. That combination, when I heard it on my most recent listen, I'm thinking, oh, there's a little Dilla going on here. There's something happening.
Oh, I see. Just the fact that it doesn't.
There are two different yeah. rhythms happening simultaneously. If you listen to these old jazz records, when Dinah's swinging, the band is swinging too.
With
the
her.
Drummer is swinging
yeah.
too. When you hear James Brown, he is not swinging when the band is not swinging. They're doing their strict funk. And of
right.
course, there's still a pocket thing. There's still maybe a groove that's a little bit behind, but there is a matching of the top line of the vocal and the instrument. So it's really interesting when you start to think about this happening in the Dilla era, I would argue. Like Dilla has just come out of going from not existing to being everywhere, to
yeah.
being like everyone's Quest
sadly
favorite.
To not existing anymore because
right.
I think he dies in like 2006.
This is
right.
Q-Tip's favorite producer. It's Questlove's favorite producer. It's maybe even Ronson's favorite
it's
producer.
It's many people's favorite.
Yeah.
producer. And I mean, like, you know, to a certain extent, it's so unfortunate that he was not with us longer. And there's also the story about him producing beats in his hospital bed.
I know. You know, I think Donuts right came out of that, right?
Yeah, Donuts is just a beautiful, beautiful album. And if you, you know, just don't know Donuts by J Dilla, just go out and listen. It's actually all instrumental. Like, there's almost no rapping on it, but it's production in the purest form. Anyway, I please continue.
No, that's exactly it. I think that there's a lot of Dilla influence going on in Rehab specifically. And I don't know how much of that was intentional or how much was just kind of, as we've been talking about, feeling what the moment was culturally.
Can you think of any other artists where the singer is swinging and the band is not, or the band is swinging? We can probably think of plenty of examples where the band is swinging and the singer is not. Pat Boone. But you can probably think, I can't think of too many where the singer is swinging and the band is not. That does seem pretty interesting.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think we can probably come up with a few more.
We'll check some out, not to put it
on the certainly, Dilla, especially like the Slum Village stuff, there's a lot of cool stuff that I think if we listen to some examples, you'll hear what I'm talking about.
Yeah, let's listen to some.
One, two. One, two.
So in that example, as you can hear, that drum beat, that looped break beat is strict. It's on the one, it's on the downbeat. The hi-hats, because sometimes he'll do it with different instruments. Sometimes the hi-hats are kind of funky. Mm-hmm. In this case, Dilla just took a strict break beat.
Yeah.
But that sample that's on top of it is a little woozy and a little behind.
Absolutely, it's behind the beat.
It's behind, and the vocals come in, and they're like, it's surprising, even as the loop goes on, and it's the same every time, every single repetition of it seems a little bit surprising. Like every single time you're like, where am I?
You're a little lost. It's like the drums are Prometheus and everything else on that song is wrapped around his ankles.
Took the words out of my
mouth.
Prevent
him from walking forward.
That's a beautiful analogy.
Thank you. I was sitting on that Prometheus. I was like, I will bring this up on today's show.
Right. So Rehab has a little less of a crazy version of that. She's swinging on top vocally. The band is mostly straight up. Drummer's giving us funk. But this is just another example of how Amy was not just a singer and not just a songwriter. That would be plenty given her voice. But she's also a musician. She's a gifted songwriter and guitar player. And in this instance, in Rehab, she's using her voice like a tool in the same way that Dilla was making beats.
That's great.
I ain't got the time, and if my daddy thinks I'm fine, just try to make me go to rehab. I won't go, go, go.
We've talked a lot about the artists who influenced Amy, but let's talk a little bit about the artists that Amy influenced. Because let's be honest, the second anybody makes a dollar in this business, a bunch of imitators show up. And some imitators are great, you know?
Some of them are great, some of them less so.
Listen, the rapper 9 came out, and I thought he was dope, but then DMX came out, copied 9. I was like, oh, DMX, that's just a poor man's 9.
Oh, man.
Now nobody remembers 9, sadly.
I have no idea who 9 is.
Shout out to 9. If you're listening, man, call us, bro.
What's the expression? There's an expression. Devo has a record called this, the pioneers with arrows in their back. Yeah. First mouse, second rat gets the cheese is another way of putting it.
Oh, yes, of course.
Second rat gets the
cheese. That only makes sense. All I'm saying is that there were people, both good and bad, who came out, and it was clear that the Amy Winehouse...
It started a trend, like you're saying.
It started a trend, absolutely. I mean, I feel like Amy opened the door for a lot of British soul singers. I mean, if you think back, in addition to just the big one, Adele.
And when you say British soul singers, like, what do they look like, some of these British soul singers?
Well, a lot of them are white people.
Interesting.
Yeah. But, you know, you've got Adele, Duffy. I don't know, people got to remember Duffy. Like, Duffy was just like, hey, this
she was there too.
This bandwagon looks awfully spacious, y'all.
We got some room on there for me.
You had Ellie Goulding. You know, the thing about Ellie Goulding and Lily Allen is that I feel like Lily Allen might have come out about the same time. I mean, there's always been these British pop songstresses, as you might put it. But at the same time, like, I feel like after Amy was in there, like, a lot of them were like, this is our time. You know what I mean? And it was, it produced music both good and derivative. And I'd also point out, like, you have Estelle, you know, who was big out there. She did American Boy with Kanye West, and you had Corinne Bailey Ray. I mean, like, there were just a lot of British, you know, songbirds that came out around the time that Amy had blown up. And of course, Amy was having some personal issues at that time, so someone had to carry the torch. Well, and obviously, Adele was the most successful.
I was just going to say, you totally teed it up, but Adele, clearly, when you think about it, that's maybe what Amy's career might have been, or should have been, in a way.
It could have been. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, of course, Adele came through their, you know, a reality pop, you know, talent show. But I feel like, you know, with that voice and with those pipes, Amy had opened doors for her that may not have been as open here.
Definitely.
As
people's ears
been.
Were ready for they, it.
Were our ready ears for were ready for that. Yeah. Our ears were ready for them to belt out these, you know, Ella Fitzgerald classics and then be like, oh, thank you.
Yeah, but it's not unimportant to point out, as you already have in this hour of our discussion, how you know, Amy wasn't the first to be doing the neo soul sound in recent past.
She wasn't even the first white one to do it. Like Jess Stone is a sort of a forgotten artist, and Jess Stone had some great songs, but she was like in the immediate wake of Jill and Angie and some of those singers. So Nick Acosta was Mark Ronson's first white girl singing black sound and songs, and she did Like a Feather. Which I first discovered, like many people, in a Gap commercial. But it was that was like when Gap commercials could break songs. Like, I'll never forget the Gap commercial that had Lovely Day by Bill Withers. And like, it had all those cool dancers on, and all of a sudden, all DJs were getting requests for Bill Withers all of a sudden. And it wasn't just the two of us. It was Lovely Day, which is to this day one of his most lovely songs.
It is a lovely song.
You know, so that was when Gap was breaking songs like TikTok, and Mark Ronson had Like a Feather with Nika Costa, and it was a great song. But for whatever reason, Nika didn't blow up, you know, and while we're on the subject, you know, because we're going to talk about him in a future episode, Robin Thicke, also from this sort of like
foreshadowing.
Very early 2000s, blue-eyed soul movement, just right here in sort of like the New York tri-state area. So you had Mark Ronson, you had Robin Thicke, you had Nick Acosta, and they were all making music at a time when there was just a little bit of a window of an opening for that type of music. Amy opened the door for all these singers, both good and bad. And I mean, let's be honest, not all of them are great. I still remember Meghan Trainor's first song, All About That Bass. It sounds like it's like the pop version of Amy Winehouse. I sort of consider it a poor man's Amy Winehouse song.
And you're right to consider it that. I will not defend, no shade, but like, you know, let's leave your comment there.
I'm not throwing shade at Meghan Trainor. She didn't write it.
Comment.
Part of the problem. Huh? But, you know, it's all good. Shout out to Meghan Trainor. If you ever want to come on the show and defend yourself. Right now, she's
we can connect.
I hear some of the unwashed masses spidey senses, talking about me. All right. Anyway.
So that was Rehab by Amy Winehouse, a worthy song to kick off the show.
Hey, Luxury, let's play one song category.
I love that game. How do we play it again?
Oh, that's right. I'm glad you asked. Okay, the rules are simple. We'll each have 30 seconds to name as many people as we can who are connected to Amy Winehouse. It could be another artist. It could be a producer. It could be a wild card. The only thing it can't be
is
a name the other person already said. So winner.
Jesus.
Hey, listen, these are the stakes. The winner gets to pick the next song. And a duffel bag filled with Renaissance tickets, no questions asked.
A duffy bag. You can't say another name. We already broke the rules. Come on. Okay, I am ready, and that prize sounds really sassy,
I'm serious.
Into it. Before the show, we flipped a coin to determine who goes first, and guess what? It's me.
It's you. All right, great. Producer Jordan, please put 30 seconds on the clock.
Mark Ronson. Rafael Sadiq.
Time is going.
Questlove. Q-Tip. Jill Scott. Erykah Badu. J Dilla. Pressure of time. Brain not working.
Pressure
Duffy.
Of time.
Adele. And also Homer Steinweiss. And then again, there is.
That's it.
Oh my God, I'm so relieved it's over. That was very stressful.
No,
I did not enjoy it.
That was super stressful. But you know, you named a lot of good ones.
I feel kind of bad for you, but I also have faith in you.
I mean, I will say, whoever goes second is
a tricky spot.
But okay.
Everyone's rooting for you, though.
No, they're not.
I didn't get any sympathy for that. I was so whiny.
Well, I'm ready to go. Let's go. Let's get it.
Do this.
All right. As soon as you say, hey, go, I'm ready to go. Phil Spector, Ron Spector, Berry Gordy, Ella Fitzgerald.
Oh, this is good.
Billie Holiday.
Smart.
Etta James.
Good track. Keep going.
Benny Goodman.
Proud of you.
Charlie Parker.
A little jealous.
John Coltrane.
Amazing.
Jay-Z.
No duds.
Pharoah Monch.
What? Left field.
Oasis.
Shocking.
Beyonce.
Obvious. Time's up. Pencils down. Who won?
Who won? I won! I won!
You deserved it. You earned that.
Man, that was hard as hell.
You earned that. You got the Renaissance.
You blew through the yeah.
I panicked at about 20 seconds.
Fun fact, the remix to Rehab that I owned was actually featured Jay-Z and Pharoah Monch.
Okay.
Yeah, so there you go. That's where Pharoah Monch. Shout out to Pharoah Monch.
That was where I lost it. That's where you won in my heart. That was beautiful. I'm very impressed.
Well, Luxury, I'm so glad I got to hear your Amy Winehouse story on our very first episode of One Song.
I know. I'm so glad we got to have this conversation. So glad the audience could join us for the ride. We really hope you all enjoyed the episode, and we really enjoyed sharing it with you.
So that's one for the history books. Luxury, help me end this thing.
I am producer, DJ, and songwriter Luxury.
And I'm actor, writer, and sometimes DJ Diala Riddle.
And this is One Song.
Until next time.
One Song is a SiriusXM and Kevin Hart's LOL Radio production. It's hosted by me, Luxury, and my friend Diallo Riddle. This episode was produced by Matthew Nelson and Jordan Colling, with engineering from Marcus Hom. Additional production support from Leslie Guam, Charles Childers, and Alicia Shimada. The show is executive produced by Kevin Hart, Ty Randolph, Mike Stein, Brian Smiley, Eric Eddings, and Eric Weil.
Hey guys, Sean Hayes here. Jason Bateman, Will Arnett, and I had a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to sit down with not one, not two, but three presidents of the United States on our recent episode of Smartless. That's because President Biden, a returning guest, brought two of his favorite pals, former Presidents Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, all joined us for unforgettable conversation. It's a historic episode of Smartless as we pry into the minds of these remarkable leaders. We'll cover everything from their time in office, America's responsibilities in the world, and their personal passions in an episode full of some candid stories, insightful perspectives, and a few surprises along the way. Whether you're a political junkie or just curious about the inner workings of the Oval Office, this episode is a must listen. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to hear from three of the most influential figures in recent American history. Follow Smartless on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also listen to Smartless ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.